Okay, so we're last class we talked about quicksort. Was that right? We started talking about quicksort. The problem of the day is something about. Let's maybe start with. We still have to sort of analyze how quicksort is in the average case, right? We have proven last class that quicksort in the best case would be n log n. In the worst case, we proved it was n squared. And I haven't convinced you one way or another how it is on average, okay? Although you know the punchline that on average it is n log n. Hopefully today I will convince you that it is n log n on average. But first we have our problem of the day, okay? It says the nuts and bolts problem is as follows. You're given a set of n bolts of different widths and n nuts. Does everybody know what a nut and a bolt is?
Okay, these things sometimes people may have different language, you know. This is a bolt. This is a nut, okay? And, you know, you can screw these things, you know, screw a nut onto a bolt. Now, if you are given a bunch of screws and a bunch of nuts, each of different sizes, the nuts and bolts problem is to pair up each nut with the corresponding bolt that fits it. Now, what's the problem, though, that when you compare nuts and bolts, the only way you can't measure how big each nut or bolt is. All you can do is to pick up a nut and a bolt and decide if the nut is too big, too small, or just right. What happens if you try to put a nut that's too small on a bolt? Won't fit. What happens if you put a nut that's too big on a bolt? It slides on and off too easily. You can easily tell that. What happens if it's just right? You know, it goes in perfectly. Okay? So you can compare a nut and bolt to determine if the nut is bigger than the bolt, the nut is less than the bolt, or the nut is equal to the bolt. Okay? And the question is, if I give you a pile of nuts and bolts, okay, how can you match each nut to the corresponding bolt? Okay? And the first question says, give an n-squared algorithm to solve the nuts and bolts algorithm problem. Okay? So it's n-squared bolt-nut comparison, right? I mean, somehow, you know, you've got this pile of nuts, pile of bolts, okay? There's n of them here and n of them there. How can you match up all the nuts to the bolts in n-squared time? Yes? Right, so an exhaustive search type or a brute force type of comparison. You pull out one nut, you compare it against all the bolts, okay, one of them will match, okay, and when it matches, you take those two and you toss them aside, right? You screw it out and you toss it aside. So it's like a, what I would call, an exhaustive comparison, which is sort of like what you do in a selection sort, sort of like what you do in any sort of these n-squared type of algorithm. You're comparing this against all the others. Why is this n-squared? How much time does it take for the first comparison? How much is it going to take for the second nut? N minus 1. So what is the sum as I goes from 1 to n of I? That is something like n squared over 2, right? We said it was n plus n. To be precise, it was n times n plus 1 over 2. So in the worst case, if you're always very unlucky, what would happen if you're very unlucky? You have to actually do all the comparisons before you find the match, right? So if you're unlucky, it's going to take you n times n over 2 plus 1 over 2 comparisons until you did the matching, right? What happens if you were very lucky? N, right? If you always magically pulled out the right nut in bulk, okay, then you took only n steps. What will it take you on average? Think about this for a second. Okay? What is going to happen on average if we do this algebra? Okay? How many comparisons are we going to have to do on average? On the first comparison. N over 2. So basically, like each time we go through this, instead of doing I, it's basically I over 2. Right? We would on average get halfway down the list before we found the one that worked. So in fact, the expected time of this algorithm is still theta of n squared. Right? Does everybody agree with that? that if you just have, you know, normal luck, you know, you're it's still going to be quadratic. Any questions about the quadratic algorithm? What's the second question, though? Now,
actually, okay, that's not the one that I wanted to say. Okay. What is it now? Suppose you only want to find the smallest bolt and its corresponding nut.
How could we do that in n squared? In it looks like order n comparisons. How can we find the smallest nut and bolt? And they give us, it looks like a bound of 2n plus 1. How can we find the smallest nut and bolt quickly? Well, how would you find the smallest nut? You can't look at a nut and say, this is smaller. I'm not allowing you to compare nuts to nuts. You're only allowed to compare nuts to bolts. Right? So there's no way you can sort of look at this thing and say, I can't hold up two nuts and say, this nut is smaller than that nut. Okay, yes. Okay, so you want to say that you start out picking a bolt, okay, and you compare it to a nut, okay? And now, what is going to happen when we do this comparison? Okay, what is it? They might be they're equal, which is we'll find them tied together. That's a nice thing. But if, in general, what we're going to get is that one of them is going to be bigger or smaller, right? So what are we going to do when we do when we get that they are? That one is bigger or smaller, what are we going to do? You take the larger one and throw it away. Because you know that that can't be the smallest nut and bolt, right? And so it looks like in every comparison, so long as I don't get equal, okay, then I will claim I can throw things away, right? Now what if I get that they're equal, though? Okay? What happens if, let's say, the nut matches the bolt exactly? What can I do then? Yeah? Okay, you're good. Now I'm going to take, I see, so if I take it now, another nut or bolt, I compare it to this pair, right? And either I'm going to throw away a nut or throw away a bolt, right? In each step, right? So basically, either, if this is going to be smaller than this bolt, let's say these guys match. If this is smaller than this, I throw away these whole two. Otherwise, I keep them together. Right? I keep these two as my best current pair. In each round, I'm throwing away one nut or bolt per comparison. I start out with 2n items. I'm throwing out all but two of them. That tells me that I'm getting something like 2n plus 1, right? Everybody believe that? Okay? Now, it looks like I didn't ask this, but let's try a question. Can you test nuts and bolts in better than n squared done? Could someone give me an expected n log n algorithm for comparing nuts and bolts? Let's say we want to pair up all the nuts and bolts. Can someone tell me how to do that in n log n expected time? We agree that the other one only took n squared time on average, right? How can we come up with one that would be on average something like n log n? Yes. Right. Okay. Okay, so what you want to say is you pick your nut, okay? Well, let's say this is a nut. And you compare this nut against all the bolts. What is likely to happen if we pick this guy at random, yeah? Typically, about half of them are going to be on the left side. Half of them are going to be on the right side. And this nut is going to find its corresponding bolt. Right? Now, what if I work on this bolt, this nut, and now divide the bolts according to it, right? I should be able to. Oh, wait, no, no, no. This guy is now paired up. Now I can take this corresponding nut, bolt, and compare it to all the nuts to figure out which nuts are less than this and which nuts are greater than that, right? So we agree that when order n work, 2 times n comparisons to be precise, we have likely divided the problem into 2 equal halves. If we get, you know, if we divided it, if we always picked the median nut, it would be exactly in half. If we, and this is the gist of why quicksort is fast, and I'll explain it more carefully later. If in fact we usually get a nut that's roughly in the middle, then in fact we split the job into two halves, each of which are equally big, right? And so what is the tree? We get the same kind of tree as we had with quicksort. Okay, and after each comparison, we divided our problem into 2 subproblems. Okay? If we usually split it roughly in half, what's the height of the tree going to be? Log n, right? And then what is the work that we're doing at each level? Well, you're going to spend n, you know, linear time in these nuts and bolts, linear time in those nuts and bolts. That's the total work at this level, right? So does everybody agree that this algorithm should give us, if we randomly pick a nut and compare it against a bolt, so that if quicksort is n log n on average, this should be n log n. This is basically a nut and bolt version of quicksort. Any questions? Everybody sort of see that? Now the interest, okay, so anyway, it's kind of a cute problem. The thing that's interesting is that we now have an n squared algorithm for worst case algorithm for nuts and bolts. We have an n log n expected algorithm. What's interesting is that there's no known simple worst case n log n algorithm for this. Okay? This is a problem that's kind of curious. Okay, there is in fact an algorithm, but but if I asked you to guarantee me that it took n log n, if you could separate nuts and bolts in n log n time and give me an algorithm that always worked in n log n time, I'd be very impressed. Okay? Any questions? Sort of an interesting point. That when we get talking about randomization, we'll get back to it. Okay? Any questions?
Do you have full order of n log n or specifically?
Order n log n. If you could give me a worst case order n log n algorithm for nuts and bolts, I will be very, very impressed. In fact, one exists, but it's extremely hopelessly complicated, and not the kind of thing I could come up with. Okay, as a research level kind of thing. Okay? Doesn't mean there isn't a simpler one, it just means that people thought about it and haven't found one. Okay? And this is actually going to get to a more interesting point about randomization in a few minutes. Okay, any questions? So let's get back and analyze quicksort.
We just used, in fact, the analysis of quicksort on the average case. Okay? And this is sort of, I mean, if you look at a standard algorithms book, you can sort of come up with an exact analysis of how many comparisons quicksort takes in the average case. Okay, and it involves getting a formula and manipulating it, a recurrence relation and manipulating it. I want to try to convince you that quicksort works well in the average case. Okay? And I want to do it in sort of the way that I understand it. Okay, a way that I think it's intuitive and it's clear to me what is happening. Okay? Suppose, let's say, what is quicksort doing? You're picking a pivot element. Okay? And the pivot element is going to ultimately sit in one spot in the array, right? When you finish doing the partitioning, it goes in the right spot in the array where it belongs. If you got unlucky and your pivot element really was the first element in the array, you spent n work and accomplished nothing, or almost nothing, okay? Let's say that we break pivot elements into good or bad, how I define them, okay? I will say a good pivot element is between n over 4 and 3 n over 4 in sorted order. Okay? Let's say that that's how I define what a good pivot element is. Okay? That means that it's in the middle half of the array. Right? Does everybody sort of agree with that? What is the probability if I pick a pivot element that it comes in the middle half of the array? A half, right? If I'm picking a random element here, there is a one-half chance it's going to be, end up in this section, okay? And a one-half section is going to end up in the bad array, right? So let's think about what happens. Let's say that you're lucky. Let's just try to think about what happens if you're lucky enough that you always pick a good element, but unlucky enough, you always pick the worst good element. Okay? So what would be the worst good element? Okay, by my measure here. N over 4 or 3N over 4, right? So what is the recursion tree going to look like if I always pick the worst good element? Okay? What's going to happen? Am I going to divide the array perfectly in half each time? No. How am I going to divide it? Here comes a fourth. Here comes 3n over 4. Here comes 3n over 4. Here comes a fourth. Okay? We agree that's what it's going to be. So this is 3/4 of n. What is the height of this tree, where I pick the worst possible good element each time? Okay? What is the height of this grid? N? Is it N?
No.
No. What is it? It might be the worst possible element overall, the worst possible good element. Meaning it splits off a quarter of it versus 3/4 of it. What's actually happening? Okay? What's the height of this tree?
Yeah.
N over 4?
No.
What is going to happen here? How do we figure out what the height of the tree is? Okay. Okay. How is it done? I think of the height of this tree as we start out with N, and we keep dividing it by 3/4 until we get down to 1. Does everybody agree with that, that that's sort of what the height of the tree is? The height of the tree is the value h, such that 3/4 to the h, okay, times n equals 1. Okay, now you have to convince yourself that this is right. If you don't convince yourself, the good question is, I don't see that. Why is that right? Any questions? Okay. Does everybody see that what we're really doing here is we're dividing it by a constant fraction? Before we were dividing it by a half, now we're dividing it by 3/4, right? A half was better, but 3/4 is not necessarily so bad. What is the height of this tree if I solve for this tree? Okay? What is it? How do we solve for h? Okay? I would multiply both sides by 4 to the h, and both sides divide by 3 to the h, so I get n equals 4/3 to the h. Everybody agree that that's right? How do I solve for h here? What is h? Take a log of both sides, okay? What is the log of this thing going to be? I claim it's going to be h times the log of 4/3. And what's this side going to be? Log of n, right? I didn't tell you what the base is, but I hit it with the same base, right? If I solve for h, what is h going to be? Log n over log 4/3. Right? What is the log of 4/3? It's a constant. one, it's two, it's something less than that, right?
Depends on what my base is exactly.
But this is basically a constant. Depends what the base is.
Okay?
But this is a constant.
Okay?
And in fact, I took the log base 4/3 of 4/3. I took this the log base 4/3 of both sides. What's the log base 4/3 of 4/3? 1, right? So this could be made to go away. And to be precise, the log of this thing is the log of base 4/3 of n. Does everybody see that? So what is the height of this tree? This is logarithmic. Okay? If I always take the worst of my good things. Okay? Any questions? Okay, then you may say, well, wait, you don't always pick a good thing. Maybe you're going to pick a bad thing, right? So every good comparison is going to succeed in dividing it by 4/3. But in fact, your tree is going to occasionally have, it's going to sometimes have bad divisions. Okay? How many bad divisions, what's the probability at each level? This is the highest pass in the tree. If this was a, how many bad divisions should I have for every good division? Right? I had a 50-50 chance of picking a good one and a 50-50 chance of picking a bad one. Right? So suppose on the bad ones, I always pick the worst possible bad one and accomplish nothing. Okay? Maybe I'll do better, okay? But I make the worst possible bad one every single time. What is going to happen when I get a bad one? I went from here 3/4 n to, let's say, 3/4 n minus 1, right? No improvement. Okay? But how often on the tallest path, I know that if all my divisions are good ones, I have a logarithmic number of good divisions. Okay? At most, a logarithmic number of good divisions. How many bad divisions should I have? I claim that my likelihood of getting a good was the same as the likelihood of getting a bad, right? So by the time I accumulate this many good divisions, I could not have accumulated more than the same number of bad ones. Does that make sense? Let's think about that. How do you feel that makes sense to? How do you feel that not makes sense to? Okay? So let's think about what we're doing here. We're flipping coins, right? Okay? Heads is good. Tails is bad. Okay? In order to divide this thing down, to cut it down to work, once we have log n good divisions, the game is over, right? So how many coin flips can I make on average before I have accumulated log n heads? Would you expect that we end up with n tails and log n heads? Not if it's a fair coin, you know. Okay, you expect the same number of heads as tails, right? So the number of bad divisions plus the number of good divisions should be about twice that of the number of good divisions. Does everybody sort of believe that? Okay? So on average, we expect that, again, you always got unlucky. You always got bad, 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 bad. Okay? But it's not going to happen, right? Is there anyone here in the room who can consistently flip a coin and have it come up heads every time? Okay? So I don't want to play games with you. But the point is you can't, right? Okay? The odds that you get, you can't consistently get bad things. Okay? Does everybody sort of agree with that? So the ratio of good to bad on the math is about, on any branch, is going to be about 50-50. Okay? And therefore, the total height of this tree is going to be order log n. Any questions about that? Okay? Let's say I want to do this proof a little differently. What if I now say that good is 90%? Okay, that if your good is in the middle 90%, maybe you don't like the fact that there's so many bad things happening, right? What if good means that you're in the middle 9/10 of the array? What is the worst possible split if you're in the middle 9/10 of the array? How big is the biggest piece after that? If I always pick, okay, is this, what is good? What? 1/10? No, I would say 1/20. Right? Because you've got 1/10 being split between a left side and a right side. Right? So what's the probability of you picking a bad element now? 9/10 of the elements are considered good. 1 out of 10. That's pretty small, right? Maybe now you can't be unlucky enough that you consistently get a lot of bad ones. What would be the tree we get from the worst possible good comparison? Okay? Suppose you always pick the one that lies at the 5% point. What's the height of that tree going to be? Okay? Yeah? Well, I can't do these so fast. I want to think what it is. I start out, what's the bigger piece going to be if I get that? The biggest piece, if I pick the worst of these possible, you know, if the worst of the ones that are out the, that are in the middle 9/10, I would say that the biggest piece is going to be 19/20 of n, right? Because I'm only splitting off 5%, right? If the middle 9/10 means that there's 5% here, 5% there, right? Everybody agree with that? So suppose I am so unlucky I always pick the one that's in the middle 5%. What is the height of the tree going to be? Okay. What power do I have to raise this to get one? What is that? Anybody tell me that? Okay, I've got 20 over 19 to the n, to the h, equals n, log base 20 over 19 of n is equal to h, right? Is this still logarithmic? It's still order log n. Why? Because for any base, any constant base, this is still logarithmic. Okay? So now, what's the likelihood that you get a lot more bad coin tosses than good coin tosses in this rank? Okay? I mean, you should get coin tosses much less. The right is not the bad height. The height of the ones that fall under the outside 10%. You're going to get far fewer of them than the height here, right? So again, this is still another argument that it's logarithmic. So long as I always bite off a constant fraction of them, okay, as opposed to an additive number, 1, 2, 3, okay, then I'm in good shape, okay? And the odds are overwhelming that I'm not going to get a lot of bad things happen. If I really pick random elements, bad things can't happen very often compared to good things. Any questions? Okay. That is why quicksort is n log n on average. Any questions? How many people sort of believe that? Many people do believe it. Okay. Many people don't believe it. Okay. So the important, it's sort of a note, the thing that's important here to see here is, I normally thought when I think about logs, I say, aha, I want to divide the problem in half. If I can divide the problem in half, I've got a log. If you can divide the problem so that your smallest piece is still a constant fraction of n, where c is larger than 0, okay, then you win. Then you will get your logarithmic height, okay? There's nothing magical about dividing it by a half. Is that clear? There's the wonderful thing about the big O notation. You're not going to worry about those constants, okay? And the logarithms will make them go away. Any questions? So that is why quicksort is n log n on average.
That's the way I understand it. You're always,
almost certainly going to bite off a constant fraction of it. If so, you win. Okay? And you have to be extremely unlucky not to win. Any questions?
That's the intuition. And, you know, just to sort of, I may even flash up to you. Actually, am I going to, maybe not. Am I going to flash up to you the recurrence relation? Let's say no. In a lot of algorithms classes, they will prove this by showing by looking out the recurrence relation for the dime complexity. But I find this more appealing. Okay, this kind of an argument is more gives me a sense as to why it's happening. Any questions? Yes.
Well, the way I my n squared, what has got to happen for me to get n log? Let's look at, this is an interesting question. How unlucky can I get and still get n log n? That's really what you're asking now. Okay? We sort of agree that if you're perfectly lucky, you're always going to hit it at n over 2. At 1/2, right? And that's obviously lucky enough for anybody. That's perfect. We sort of agree, if you bite it off here, where if this was, let's say, the n over second element.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The n over second. Okay, n over second element. You get a perfect division, right? If you have up to the n over c element for any constant, you win. Right? Does everybody agree with that? This is all good. We agree if you split off the first element, the second element, actually up to any cth element. If I give you the tenth element always, that's bad, right? What will be the height of the tree if I always give you the tenth element when you do this? What's the height of the tree? You start out with a block of n. What's the bigger block after the first one? I always give you the 10th element in sorted order as your pivot. N minus 10. What's the next height? The next size? Or the next layer? N minus 20. What's the height of the tree going to be? And what is it going to be exactly? Just to be fair. N divided by 10. Right? How many tens can you add out of it, right? So if you have an additive constant, you lose. If you have a multiplicative constant, you win. Okay? Kind of a funny thing to think about. And there's sort of a window in here. Like, what if you always pick the log n element? Okay? What if you always pick the log n element? Now you've got n minus log n. N minus log n here. 2 log n. What's the height of the tree going to be? N over log n, right? But if you have a large array, you're almost certain to get, you pick a constant, you're almost certain that you're usually going to get it within this divided by a constant, rather than the additive log n elements on each side, or square root n elements on each side. There's much more middle than there is n. That's the point here. There is much more middle than there is n. So you shouldn't hit the middle. You shouldn't hit the n's very often. Any questions? Okay. Any questions about this? That is why quicksort is n log n on average, and why our nuts and bolts is n log n on average. Okay, if we pick a random element, okay, as our pivot. Any questions? Okay, this whole notion of randomization is a very interesting point. Okay, and I want to go through this in a little bit more, talk a little bit more about it, because randomization is really an amazing thing. Okay? Suppose, let's say, that you are writing a sorting program. That's why Bush is writing a sorting program. Okay?
And Saddam Hussein is giving him the test cases for it. Okay? Now, Bush would probably say, well, Quicksort is a good algorithm. I will implement Quicksort. And how do you pick the pivot element? Have we talked about how you pick a pivot element? What might be a reasonable way to pick a pivot element? What? I say at random, but let's say that instead Bush were to always pick a deterministic limit. Maybe by picking the average of the first, the last, and the third. That sounds like a good idea, right? First, the last, and the middle, and the last. Or always picking the last, right? That's what we pretty much have talked about before. If we pick the pivot deterministically, Hussein, who wants to make Bush look bad, what would he do? What element? Let's say Bush's program is always going to put the pivot in the pick the pivot from the last element. What is the element? If Bush is giving you a test data for this, what is Hussein going to put in the last element in the array? Smallest possible element, right? And now what's going to happen? You're going to recursively do this thing and nothing works, right? Okay? Then you're going to again put this thing here. If Hussein knows Bush's program, and Bush is picking the choices deterministically, there is a worst-case input on which that program is guaranteed to fail or run slowly. Is that clear? So, for example, suppose let's say instead Bush always picked the pivot element as being the first element. Okay? I mean, if the first and the last are probably the same thing. I claim the sorted permutation is the worst case input, right? That if you give either for the median of three, or the pick the leftmost one, or pick the rightmost one, if you pick any of those as your pivot element, on this particular input, it will take quadratic time. Does everybody agree with that? So there is an obvious worst case. And you can bet Hussein will with glee give that to Bush as an input. Now, how could Bush write the program so there is no worst case input that his adversary could give it? Okay, yeah.
Yes, he picks a random index.
What if you always flip a coin and pick a random element? Okay. Now Hussein's in trouble, right? Hussein's desperate to give you an input such that your pivot is going to be bad, but you're not telling him where the pivot is, right? You're flipping a coin at that point. No input is particularly better or worse than the other. If you're extremely unlucky, okay, yes, you might, when you pick your random elements, always manage to find where that one was, okay? But notice what has changed. Something very subtle has changed. Now, the worst case of Quicksort is being unlucky rather than getting somebody giving you a bad answer, some input you didn't want to see. Okay? Does everybody see that there's a distinction here? There's an important distinction. Okay? Before, we could say, if I always insist on picking the median of three, or the leftmost, or the rightmost, okay? If you give me random input data, then Quicksort will run an n log n time. If I take a random element, okay, my algorithm will, with high probability, no matter what you give me, run an n log n time. Does everybody see the distinction? Yes. Okay, so what if all numbers are exactly the same? That's an interesting question. What will Quicksort do if all numbers are exactly the same? Okay. What's going to happen? It depends exactly on how you write your pivot routine, right? Before, I think we said we were going to put all the numbers less than or equal to x on the left, and all the numbers greater than x on the right. Let's say that that was it.
What is going to happen in Quicksort if all the keys are identical? Okay, it will take what? It will take n time to do the partitioning. What's the height of the, what's the total complexity of the algorithm going to be? N squared. Right? Does everybody see that? Why is it? Because all the elements that are less than or equal to the pivot get thrown here. The pivot is perfectly happy where it's sitting. Okay? You're only going to take off one element per time, right? This actually once happened to me when I was using a quick sort. Okay? That something took n squared time when all the elements were identical. Did everybody see why that would be? Can anybody see how to fix the problem? Yeah?
Maybe if when you're positioning it, you check that if everything is to one side or to the other side, then let's find out how you coded it, which other side goes to the equal stuff on. Like, depending on if you code for the equal case to go on the left or the right, if all the elements end up on the left or the right, then you can stop because you're wrong.
Well, if all the elements that were certainly you could check if all these elements were identical. But that's not really enough. Because so it could be the case that 99% of these items were identical. Okay? So what do you have to do? Okay, yeah. Okay, the way that I would probably do it is, after I did my partitioning, I now have less than or equal to x here. I have x now here, and greater than x here. What I would probably do is run through all the elements here. Are u equal to x? If so, swap u in there. And make another linear pass through here to bring all the x elements. The identical, so I move all the identical elements next to the pivot. Does everybody see I can do that in linear time? Right? All the elements that are going to be equal to the pivot will be on this side. So in a linear pass through that, I can swap them into position just like I did my regular partition and move them all right over to here. Okay? Now what would I do? Yeah? I don't have to sort them anymore, right? All of these guys are now in the right spot, right? Because all these elements are less than x, all these elements are greater than x, all these elements are equal to x. Now I would sort this part and sort that part. Okay? Does this change the asymptotic complexity? What I did here. It's still going to be n log n now on average, right? Why? Because it took me, I'm still doing only a linear amount of work at each level, right? Now instead of doing n steps, maybe I'm doing 2n steps. It's still linear at each level. The tree is going to be now balanced. Okay, so everything is still okay. Okay, so you're right. If you want to build a production sort, you better handle the equals correctly, or else you've got trouble. Okay? Any questions? So randomized algorithms are really amazing things, okay?
Because they enable you to... the time bounds are going to depend purely upon how lucky you are, and not how not on what the input is. Okay.
And so, you can sort of. It's hard to be so unlucky that in quicksort you will always pick a bad far pivot element, right? If you're counting on luck to give you a bad case for quicksort, you can't do it. Right? Because the odds you're going to get so many more heads than tails is vanishingly small. Okay? By picking a random element, we avoid the possibility that there's some quirk in the data. Okay? that would cause the bad case. Okay? Any questions? So randomized algorithms are very interesting things. We saw with the nuts and bolts problem. One thing that's true is randomized algorithms are often easy to invent and analyze, whereas the worst case complexity can be hard. So like our nuts and bolts problem, I convinced you, I think all of you, that if you randomly pick a nut and use that to partition the bolts, it will take n log n time with high probability. I do not know a simple enough algorithm that's the worst case n log n for that problem. I know worst case n log n sorting algorithms. Okay, so for quicksort, it's not that impressive. But for the nuts and bolts problem, there seems to be a difference somehow between the ease of getting a randomized algorithm that gives you a high guarantee, probability guarantee, and a worst case guarantee. Okay? Any questions? So randomization is a very, very interesting thing. And when you say, well, what are the exciting trends in research in algorithms? The area of studying randomized algorithms has become a very important idea in recent years. Okay? And quicksort is sort of a classic example of a randomized algorithm. Any questions? Okay? Any questions about quicksort at all? Or randomization or anything like that? Okay? Good.
So let's look a little bit more at sorting. Let me instead, we've got a limited amount of time to talk about sorting. I'm not going to show you the sorting lower bound, okay? I'd like to show you a different idea for sorting. It's kind of an interesting, a completely different approach, okay? All the sorting algorithms we have seen, deep sort, quick sort, selection sort, merge sort, all these algorithms are what I would call comparison-based algorithms, right? What was the main step that we were doing that we were counting? We were taking two elements and saying which one of you is bigger, right? And that the number of times we did comparisons, okay, was what was the driving time complexity of the algorithm, okay? What about algorithms where we do not do comparisons? Okay? Can someone come up with an example of a sorting algorithm where you don't do comparisons? Okay? Where you do something else? Okay? Well, let's go back further. Think about data structures. When you did binary search trees, you were doing comparisons, right? That was sort of comparisons of what made binary search trees, right? We do less than me, greater than me, something like that. Can anybody think of a dictionary data structure which does not rely on doing comparisons, less than or greater than comparisons, yeah? Hashing, okay? Hashing was an interesting sort of an oddball data structure that we didn't have time to talk about, unfortunately. But you all know about hashing, and hashing is a very good thing. Right? What was hashing? We had an array full of buckets. How did a hash table work? Okay, I mean, basically, again, in the simplest way to do it. There are a couple different ways to do it. It's not all that interesting. Let's say that we set up an array of n buckets. Okay, you're going to put n things in here. Our hash function, remember, mapped them to hopefully a random bucket. Right? So how do we look up an item? Okay, suppose I want to look up, I have a hash table of this class, and I want to find out is Mary in the class. Okay, I hash my first name. Okay? How would I do it? Originally, I took every person in the class, I computed a function on their first name. That gave me a number from 1 to n, right? And I then put Mary in the corresponding bucket, right? Now then, how did I look somebody up? Okay, to look somebody up, what did I do? I hashed them and I go to that bucket. I know that if that person is in the table, they have to be in this bucket, right? Yeah? I'm doing equality, but not less than greater than.
Does everybody see that less than greater than have no trucking? There's no trucking with that here. Right? It's all equals. Okay? And how much time did hashing take to look it up if we got, you know, lucky? Constant time, not log n time. Constant time, right? Why hash tables are really a good thing. What if you got unlucky? What would happen if you got unlucky? Then suddenly everybody got hashed to this. Let's say your hash function was go to zero. Okay? You decided you were going to save effort in writing your hash function. Okay? What happened? Bad things happened. Everybody went into that corner. Right? So the worst case was order n. But if you got lucky, and if your hash function was picking these things randomly, you were going to get lucky, right? These things weren't going to be very, you would expect it to be very uniformly distributed. Okay? You should then have very low height. Okay? Can anybody think of a way to use this hashing idea to sort? Okay? How can we use a hashing-like idea to sort? Okay? Remember, sort of the nice thing about hashing was it took our log n thing and took it to constant time on average, right? What if I,
You make the array sufficiently big enough, then, and you make the function appropriate, then you could hash things that the elements are considered smaller. So go to smaller points in the array and take the bigger, bigger points in the array.
So what if, let's say, my hash buckets were, just to be safe, let's say that we were hashing strings. Okay? And suppose I had an A bucket, a B bucket, a C bucket, D bucket, dot, 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 up to Z bucket. Okay? Every key would go uniquely into one bucket, right? Schema would go into the S bucket. Okay? Now then, suppose you threw everybody into their buckets. How now would you complete the job of sorting? Yeah? Well, you can do the second letter, but it will suffice to do. Now sort all the A keys. All the A keys are before everybody else, right? So now we can sort these guys, perhaps by throwing them into other buckets and doing something else. Okay? Now we sort the B keys. Now we sort the C keys. Okay? I claim that we've now reduced the problem from sorting the whole N elements to once we throw them in buckets to sorting each bucket. Does everybody agree with that? Now, suppose we have N buckets. Let's say we're sorting numbers from 1 to a gazillion. Okay? And we're sorting N items. Okay? The first bucket will be all the numbers, let's say they're integers. We have all the numbers from 1 to N over a gazillion. Another is up to n to 2n over a gazillion, and so on. Okay? Suppose I divide the intervals into, if I want to sort numbers, into windows of size n over a gazillion. How much time will it take to throw a number into this right bucket? Suppose I give you a number x. How do you figure out what number x goes into? What do I do? Yeah? What function, to be precise? Well, not hash function. I can't throw it randomly. I need to throw it into a hash function such that the ordering is preserved, right? Everybody did for sorting, I need a stronger characteristic, yeah? Basically, take the high order bits are basically divided by J, right? If I took your input number x and divided by g, okay, or n over g, the bucket size, that will tell me what bucket it goes in. Does everybody agree that if I have 100 buckets, if I divide the number by 100, the integer part that is there tells me what bucket it goes into. Not the remainder, the actual integer division. Right? Suppose, let's say I have 100 buckets. What bucket does 1,932.4 go into? What bucket should it go into if I have 100 buckets? I want the 19 bucket.
Right, I guess I have to be a little bit precise. The numbers were ranging from 00 to 999. It's the high order bits that would matter, right? That's required for sorting. So what if our numbers were, if our elements were randomly selected numbers from 1 to gazillion, and we set up n buckets like this, what is the time complexity of this bucket sort algorithm? Let's stop and think about it. How much time will it take to throw everybody into a bucket? Constant for each element, n items, n cost, right? You have to probably initialize all these buckets initially, right? You have to initialize at the nil. That will take order n time if I have n buckets, right? For each element, I do a division, toss it in a bucket, add it to the list. That's constant time. In O sub n time, I have tossed everybody into a bucket, right? How much time does it take to complete the job of sorting? Well, I've got to sort the elements in the first list. How many elements will there be in the first list? Assuming I have a moderate luck. How many elements will there be? If I have n items, I throw them into n buckets randomly. How many items will be in the first list? One, two, a constant. Okay? How much time does it take to sort a constant number of things? Use slow sort. How much time does it take? A constant amount of time, right? So if by my throwing them into buckets, I only have a constant number in each item, what is going to happen? It'll be a constant amount of time to sort this bucket, a constant amount of time to sort that bucket. N times a constant is going to be what? N. So using this bucket sort, in principle, okay, if my numbers are randomly uniformly distributed from zero to the maximum, this should take order N time. Does everybody agree? Yeah?
If you're extremely unlucky, though, and let's say you're splitting it up by dividing by 100, and I give you everything under 100, then it's still going to upload a 1.
Right. As Clint Eastwood said, before you use this algorithm, do you feel lucky? You have to, this is sort of assuming, now, know what this is assuming. This is assuming an equal distribution of the integers, the smooth distribution of your items. So, in the worst case, if your adversary is giving you input, if Saddam Hussein is giving you input, you're in trouble with this sorting algorithm, right? Were you in trouble for hashing? Not if you used a really good hash function, right? Somehow, if you're, you know, in principle, hashing, you're scrambling things, you have the freedom with a hash function to do something about scrambling the order of the buckets. Here we have to preserve the order of the buckets, right? So we don't have that much freedom here. Okay? So if you know the items are equally distributed, then this kind of a bucketing technique is a good thing. Yeah? Okay, so one thing you could say is, well, you could then quick sort each bucket and you're no worse off. Okay, you spend order n time to throw them in the buckets, and then you quick sort it. That's one way around it. Okay? Now you've got to write two different sorting algorithms. So maybe the nudge. And so in the worst case, or the, you know, basically, if you know something about the input distribution, these kind of algorithms can do better, okay? But in the worst case, you can get nailed, yeah.
Isn't the concept of hash table, though, that you give, when you want to retrieve something, you give it something to the hash function to get it?
Right.
So after you've sorted it into here, there isn't really a direct way to retrieve them in sorted order unless you're going to actually just use it as an array now rather than as a hash function.
Wait, so you want to now know, if I wanted to use this structure for hashing, well, I mean, basically, I throw them in buckets. I have a linked list, let's say, associated with each bucket of all the elements that fell into it. This could be using a, this could be used as a hash table, if you will. Is that you do know for any element what bucket does it go, would it go into, by just dividing it by the range. The trouble is that your hash function, because it's forced to keep the buckets in order, that all the elements in the left buckets have to be less than all the elements in this bucket. You don't have very much freedom in your hash function, right?
you're forced to pick something like just chop off the lower order bits, use the higher order bits. In hashing, what makes hashing good is that you allow yourself a hash function that for even similar things is going to scramble it up. Right? That's what really a good hash function is. Would take two things that are very, very similar and put them in different buckets. That's what you dream of. That's how you solve this problem. Okay? But you can't do that if you're trying to use this for sorting, because you need to, in order to combine the sorted lists, you want to have make sure that the lists themselves are ordered. Any questions? Okay? So hashing and bucketing techniques are good, practical, street-level, you know, algorithm techniques. In the worst case, they don't do you any good. Okay, but if you know something about the distribution of data, then you're in good shape. Okay, any questions? Okay. One cautionary tale I like to talk about, though, is let's think, though, how much you know. So we talked about, basically, bucket sort here. Okay? We tossed, we divided the buckets into buckets of equal size, threw an element into the bucket, and if we got lucky, we spent linear time. And this sort of assumes that we ended up with elements evenly distributed. And in general, bucketing techniques rely on the fact that you think you know the distribution of how many things there are. Okay? You think you know what your data looks like. So suppose, let's say, your job was to sort the names in the telephone book. How many Skeeners are there in the telephone book? A lot or a little? Very few, okay? It's like on the order of 20, okay, in the world, okay? So in any telephone book, you're not going to get away with more than 3 or 4. How many Smiths are there in any telephone book? Is it a lot or a little?
A lot.
Okay. How many Shiflets are there in a telephone book? A lot or a little? Who here has ever met anyone named Shiflet? You met a Shiflet? Okay. Any other people meet a Shiflet in their life? How many Shiflets have you met?
Two.
Where did you meet him? Where did you meet him? Where was his high school? Okay. Well, let me show you that in if you look in the Manhattan phone book, there's about 7 Shiflets. But if you look at a Charlottesville, Virginia phone book, okay, this is one of my, that's where I went to college. In fact, I'll show you a full page from the Charlottesville, Virginia phone book. Okay? If you look at this, a typical, in the Charlottesville, Virginia phone book, Charlottesville only has about 50,000 people. They're on the order of 4 or 5 pages of Shiflets in the phone book. Okay? Shiflets are not uniformly distributed around the world. Okay? Why is this? It's historical reasons of how the Shiflets were this mountain clan that sort of, you know, lived together by themselves and then moved to Charlottesville. And somehow, there were a lot of them. But think what would happen if you sort of assumed that letters were distributed evenly in the alphabet. What would happen if you did bucket sort on the alphabet in Charlottesville? Your S bin is going to be incredibly huge. So what might you do? You had this idea of what if we recursively divide this smaller, right? Why don't we now make this an SA bucket, an SB bucket, an SH bucket? Where's everybody going to go? The SH bucket. Well, what if I now have an SHI bucket? Okay, everybody's going to end up there. Okay, basically it's not until you've gone through like 8 or 9 levels until you basically run out of this whole name Shiflet and gotten the first names that you'll start to get some decomposing here. So the moral of this is, in general, saying you know something about the distribution of data can be useful, okay? It can be a good thing, but you have to be aware that somehow the real world throws you a curve, okay? And that's why we like worst-case algorithms here, is to know that regardless of how many Shiflets there are or where they are, okay, which sort is still going to be n log n on average. Regardless, if you're just a random pivoting, okay, no matter how many Shiflets there are and where they are, it's still n log n. Any questions about that? Okay? Any questions about Shiflets or anything else? Any questions about anything on the midterm?
Let's just take a look. We've got about, as I recall, about 10 minutes, right? the class is over. Is that right? 8. Okay. Does anyone want to ask any midterm type questions or questions in more review lessons?
I guess if you do well on the homeworks,
If you do well on the homeworks and did well on the homeworks because you understood what you were doing, then you should do well on the midterms. Okay. Well, you know, again, I don't want to make any guarantees, but in general, the reason we give the homeworks is if you know, understand how to do the homeworks, that's supposed to help you. Okay? That's the vision. Yes?
I haven't looked at homework 2 yet, but that can do...
Okay, so homework 2, that's a good point. On homework 2, several of the problems are unsorted. Okay? So I would say if you take a look at this thing, the problems on basically the first page of homework 2 are sorting type problems. Okay, and on the second page, in general, I don't want to completely think I've divided it, are basically the more complicated dynamic programming or divide and conquer things. So I think, looking at this, the problems on the first page would be probably fair game and a good thing to look at. Okay, so I would encourage you to look at the problems on the first page. Yes?
Can you ask questions from the homework or no?
If it's on the list, I can ask questions on it. I don't guarantee, I might very well ask questions on the homework. I make no promises. Okay, I mean, you know, I will decide. It's not forbidden. Okay, so that might be a good idea then to say, hey, maybe I'll do my homework now before the exam. That part of the homework before the exam might be a very good thing to do. Okay, any other questions? Okay, any particular topics or comments people want any review on? Yes. Chapters, the test should cover chapters 1 and 2 in the book. Right, and that's Vigo and sorting and inserting, right. The third chapter is dynamic. No, we're not going to get into the third chapter. Okay? Yes?
Are you going to add
any office hours? I'm not going to add any office hours. I've been having spectacularly few people come by my office hours. Now, there's two reasons for that. One is that people are basically satisfied, and people haven't really been looking for me. The other is that there's like a conflict right after this. How many people have been suffering with the fact that I have my office hours right after class? A fair number of people. Okay. I don't know quite what to do about this. Right now, there's not much time between now. What I'm saying is, if you have a conflict with my office hours, send me an email, and I will try to see what I can do. Okay. What is the conflict, by the way? What is the conflict with the exam, with the office hours in general? Okay, so let me, if you have a conflict, send me an email, say I have a conflict, and I'll see what I can do about it. Okay. In general, I like to meet with people after class. Yeah. What? How free am I tomorrow? If you can catch me, I'll either say yes or no. Okay, but I think I got tomorrow's not necessarily the best day. You try to catch me. But in general, the TA has office hours tomorrow. Okay, I would encourage you to go visit him. And if you can catch me. Oh, the other thing I do have tomorrow is a pizza with the prof. I do not want to talk about midterm stuff like that. I want to talk about your lives and stuff like that. So if you signed up, I hope to see you. If you've not signed up and you still want to sign up, come to me. There are a few slots left. That's at 12:30 at my office. Anything else? Okay, good luck. We'll see you then.